Right. Hi, I'm Vicky. I have a 6-year-old daughter. Anybody except Jenna in this room, which is surprising. So before I became a mom, I was sort of super involved with Lower East Side squatting, anarchist politics. And once I became a mom, I found that, like, I wasn't able to be as involved. And part of it was, like, the new responsibilities of parenting, but a large part of it also was the fact that the collectives and groups that I had been working with weren't set up to deal with new parents. They, like, didn't know how to, and they weren't willing to try to learn how to. So I want to give, like, two examples of what happened, like, sort of, like, in the first, like, couple of years of my being a mom that, like, emphasizes, like, how support or lack of support can determine whether or not a new parent, specifically a new mother, because it seems like even though we try to, like, form new ways of relating to each other, when a hetero couple has a kid, dad still gets to go out and be super activist and super active, and mom is expected to stay home and do childcare. And if mom goes out, she's expected to, like, figure out childcare, mothering, responsibilities, plus being involved in the community. So when my daughter was maybe 3 or 4 months old, I was asked to be part of the collective that started, that formed Mayday Books, which is tabling upstairs. And the space was in this huge cavernous theater with a dog that belonged to the theater that would randomly bite people. This was wonderful. And the theater lobby was just huge. So there wasn't a way to, like, sort of, like, keep an eye on the kid, make sure the dog wasn't in. And I brought these concerns up once my daughter became mobile, and I was like, wait, I can't work a shift at this bookstore, keep an eye on the bookstore as my daughter toddles off into the sunset over there, knowing that there's also this dog, maybe there are other people around, maybe she'll fall down the staircase. And I brought these concerns up to various members of the collective, and the most I ever got was, well, maybe one of these days we'll form a childcare subcommittee, but until then, you're on your own. And this was the lack of support that I got, and I dropped out of that collective. So it's not so much that I was saying, like, hey, get rid of the dog, get rid of this, but nobody was even willing to say, like, this is a valid concern of one of our founding members. We should do something about this. Maybe put a gate up so that, like, you know, like, the dog can't get in, baby can't get out. And none of that was present. But one other thing that, like, happened around the same time was there was the big February 2003 march against the war on Iraq in New York, and some of us formed a mama baby block, Jen over here, and some other people. And so we brought our children, our small children, in strollers, and not so small children, in strollers, and we went out to this huge, crazy march where the police were dividing people. And one of the things that our sort of immediate community, made up of sort of punks and activists, did was they formed an affinity group, and their affinity group's job was to make sure our group was safe. So because they were childless, they were more mobile, they were able to actually fish people out from crowds and make sure that we weren't separated and stuck in any danger. At one point, we saw riot cops mobilizing on a street corner, and some parents had been trapped behind crowds, like, with their strollers and unable to, like, get out. And with the help of some of our friends who didn't have kids in this affinity group, they actually went back into the crowd and, you know, fished people out to make sure that we were all safe and we were all together. And that was a really awesome thing for them to do, and this was something that at least made me feel, like, a lot safer and a lot more supported than if we had just gone out on our own as a mama baby block and then been like, wait, there's no way that, you know, like, I would like to help my friend out, but I've also got a small child in a stroller, and there's no way I can go back into that fray and make sure that my friend is safe. So those are, like, two things that happened within the first 2 years of my, you know, my new life as a parent that made me realize that, like, yes, there is a need for community support if we're going to stay active, if we're going to stay involved, if, you know, we're going to keep growing as a movement. So with that in mind, I started surveying anarchist mothers around the country to say, like, what has been your experience with the anarchist scene, with support or lack of support? Like, what has made you feel included? What has made you feel excluded? What have you stuck with? Why have you stuck with it? And like China said, there are certain trends that seem to, like, and answers that seem to happen over and over again. Like, ways that moms felt excluded and ways that moms who are still involved felt included enough to, like, be like, yeah, even though it is more work to juggle kid, job, family responsibilities, whatever else, and my activism, I'm still involved in this. So I'm just going to, like, sort of run through a couple of, like, common answers, and then I don't know, we can open it up for more talk, and Jen can also talk about things that I haven't touched on. So one of the things that, some of the things that moms, and again I'm saying moms because in my talks with parents or hetero parents, it seems like the bulk of the child rearing, child care responsibility still falls on mom. This, like, you know, but you can also broaden this to parents in general, is that people assume that we don't want to stay involved after we get pregnant, after we have kids. They're like, yeah, well, I guess you're not going to do that anymore because you have a kid, you know. Oh, this person doesn't want to be involved because they have a kid. Oh, isn't it kind of crappy that, you know, once people have kids, they drop out? Why do they do that as opposed to, like, what is going on here that, you know, makes us, like, makes kids or families not feel welcome? People not asking them, like, do you want to stay involved? How can we help you to stay involved? Is it that, like, you know, like, we can all take turns holding the baby while you're trying to do something? You know, we can all take turns engaging your child. Events or even meetings not having childcare or depending solely upon parents to do childcare. Like, if you want childcare, you set it up, as opposed to, like, gee, you know, this person has become a parent, or this parent is joining our group. How can we help this person, like, balance, you know, having their child here versus being and actively participating? Not challenging any sort of, like, anti-breeder rhetoric that has been so prevalent in the anarchist movement, like, stemming from, like, things like Earth First, and they're, like, anti-baby, anti-breeder, you know, like the commonly held belief that we're overpopulated and how dare you breed. And this kind of rhetoric is really alienating to us. And when no one challenges it except for parents, it makes us feel like, well, why are we bothering to put our energy in this movement? Meetings and events that don't start on time, because those of us with small children or even bigger children, like, can't stay out all night, or things happening late at night. And then also, like, having decisions in groups or organizations being made during hangout / social time that parents can't go to. Like, we as parents, especially parents of, like, smaller children or maybe special needs children, can't be like, yeah, I'm going to leave my kid at home and go hang out at this bar or party or after thing that's going on. Oh, but, like, 10 people from my group were there, and they just kind of made a decision to do X, Y, and Z with our newsletter, our space, our event. And I didn't get a say because I wasn't able to, like, go hang out during this time. Ways that parents and especially mothers have felt included were when events and meetings offered childcare and asked, like, well, what are your needs for childcare? People making a conscious effort to make a space kids safe, like with Mayday Books, had people said, you know what, let's try this gate thing. Let's try this. I would have felt a lot more included than, yeah, you know what, if you don't want your kid to be bit, maybe you could get a babysitter while you, you know, volunteer at our bookstore. People developing relationships with our kids so that not all the child rearing falls upon us. So when we have a kid, it feels more like there's a community that looks out for our children and not just like, that kid is yours and that is your responsibility, not mine, not my responsibility, sort of that going back to like capitalist, like mine, yours, you know, thing.
And that's also really authoritarian. Like, that's such an authoritarian principle to have an anarchist community where it's like, that's your child and only you can, you know, say something and everybody else will just ignore it or just like, oh, that sucks, you have a problem, well, you really shouldn't be here. I just think, you know, like, as anarchists, we really need to challenge that and think about it. And it, yeah, we probably need some discussion and to figure it out. It's not easy, but we shouldn't be having these authoritarian approaches to parenting in an anarchist community.
A couple of other things is, like, playing or interacting with a child who's at a meeting, like this one, who doesn't seem to want to interact with, at least not with me, because I'm yelling. You know, but, like, if a child wants attention, not leaving it to the parent to be like, yeah, you deal with your child and not participate fully. And letting parents know about events or actions that are kid-friendly or of interest to kids, or even better, if you've developed somewhat of a relationship, offering to take the child. You know, like, hey, I'm going to go to this awesome gardening workshop. Maybe your kid wants to, like, sit and, like, dig and, you know, be in the dirt and, like, you can go do something else, but this is something that, like, your child might be interested in. Like, for the longest time, my friend Lizanne would take my daughter to Critical Mass, and I don't bike. you know, my daughter's father doesn't bike. This is not something she ever would have experienced from either of us. And up until the cops really started harassing Critical Mass, she had an awesome time. She'd be on the back of the bike. She'd be part of this ride. You know, like, other people would look out for them. You know, and this was something that she never would have had otherwise. Like, you know, like, 3 years of, like, going to Critical Mass, you know, every last Friday of the month. And that was something that really helped me, because it gave me a little bit of free time. It really helped her feel like she was part of, like, a larger group, and it's not just, like, nuclear family, mom, dad, kid, you know, and it also sort of, like, made other people be like, wow, you know, like, this is something that you can do with kids. This is not just, like, this, like, you know, single person type of thing. And also, just asking us, like, what do we need? Like, you know, like, how can you help? You know, and maybe sometimes you can't help, you know, like, maybe I'm like, yeah, you know, it sucks because I lost my job and I'm broke and I don't have any money for rent, you know, and you're like, I can't help you with that. But sometimes it might be like, yeah, can you just watch her for 5 minutes? I need to go take a walk. I need to, like, go climb up that high ladder and get something super toxic off the shelf, you know? Something like that can also really help. So, now I'm going to, I feel like I talk a lot, so I'm going to turn it back over to you guys. Okay.
Yeah. We've been collecting a list of concrete ways that you can help support women and children. Because in our first workshop, that was like a group activity we did. So I have a bunch of handouts, you know, later on. These are a list of concrete things you can do. Sometimes it's just a way of thinking. Like, you can even walk down the street and somebody could drop their bag and you can just walk by them, or you could be like, hey, can I help you pick that up, like an old person? You know, sometimes people just don't think about each other, even riding the bus, you know, maybe somebody's pregnant and the other person doesn't offer their seat. So in some ways it's just looking around you and being more, noticing somebody else's needs and maybe thinking that maybe you could help a little bit. Like, your little help could be, like, immense. It could change, like, their experience in that day and, like, this child's life and everything, just for the fact that you go, oh, I could hold that baby for a minute while you tie your shoe. You know, there's something, or a lot of times when kids make noise, like, I think we have to learn to accept some of their noise, you know, like, they're another participant, but sometimes they're making so much noise, like, really somebody has to leave the room with them. Well, maybe not the parent, you know, like, if you're a friend to the parent, you could take the child and go outside so they could finish, like, if they were having an integral part of the meeting so they could listen. So in a way, it's just being considerate and thinking of those things. And one, like, great experiment to do is to have childcare at all radical events, because if we're here talking about ideas, like, this is our time, this is the Anarchist Book Fair. Like, this is totally our time to make something different. And so, like, so I'm super interested in, like, radical childcare, because it's just so, like, finite and concrete that we can work on this and we can make it better and we can have something that pretty soon all of us will just think is part of, like, protests and gathering. Like, oh, yeah, there's childcare, you know. Yeah, I think I'll volunteer an hour, you know. Or maybe you really don't like to hang out with kids at all. Well, maybe I'll bring some little sweaters for them or something. I think there's other things you could do for kids and parents that you don't even have to, like, be hands-on. But just, you know, thinking of that. And the reason why I did childcare at Becca from Baltimore, Red Emma's, and that was a person I worked with at the Mid-Atlantic Radical Book Fair. I organized childcare there. And the whole reason why I even did it is because I started to listen to my own workshops. Like, the workshop, I was sharing my experience. Like, my daughter's 19 now. So I was sharing my experiences, good and bad, you know, for others. And then I started to go, my hands are kind of free. Like, I'm sitting here, like, this parent's struggling there, and I'm talking like, yeah, it was hard for me, and I needed help, you know. But I'm like, oh, maybe I should help that person over there. And so I kind of had to put, like, I had to kind of walk my talk, because I was just talking, you know, and I went to the organizers, and I told them, I was like, I'm not good at organizing things, but I'm just here a representative of parents and kids' needs to just tell you that childcare is important and you should do it. And they were like, yeah, that's cool, but we don't have anybody doing it, you know, like, we thought about it, but there's nobody doing it. And so I went back, and by the next second meeting, I was like, why don't I organize it? Like, I'm telling them that they should have it, but it's like, it's like stepping in to do something, like, yeah, this should be done, well, maybe you should do it. And Iris had already picked out a room. Like, they had this amazing space in this theater. It's always nice when you have a great space when you have an event going on. And Iris had already picked out a room. Like, when you go in, and then to the right, It was very central. It was a cafe, but that would be turned into Kids Corner. So nobody's going to miss it. It's very visible. That was a key element of making it great, because usually childcare is relegated to somewhere far away. It can be really bad. It can be, well, number one, it can be not useful for parents, because, okay, there's childcare to go to the protest, but you have to get on the bus and go over there to drop your kids off, and now you're going to the protest over here. I mean, that's like worst-case scenario. Like, it's so inaccessible you can't even use it. But then the other thing is, it's just that kind of thing of, like, not caring about kids or just kind of keeping them secretive, or, like, the last, you know, like, oh, there's basement closet or something, you know. I mean, parents and children's concerns are often shuffled off, you know. We're a very poor and oppressed group, basically, and it's just something that happens. And so to have, so number one, just to have that space, like, super visible, I was like, cool, like, it's going to be central. And then I tried to make it very beautiful and welcoming, and just put up posters and just, you know, like, I prepared the room. And I think making a space also welcoming, like, I had this giant gorilla that's just in my dining room. He's like a stuffed animal gorilla. So I brought him, and then there was this guy, like a young adult grown guy. He started playing with the gorilla. So I think it's like, I wanted to bring in the energy of the child free. Like, I wanted us to be, like, all together. I didn't want it to be the separatist thing. So I think making the space inviting, and then just number one, having the space. Because the first thing that happened when I was setting it up, there was a father who had come to talk at the info shop, and he had his child with him. He didn't know there was going to be child care, and there wasn't officially child care yet. I was just setting up the space. And so he was like, oh, can I leave my kid here and go talk? And I was like, no, because I'm just setting it up. It's just me. Like, this is the time to set up. Like, there's actually not child care yet, you know. And then that boy who was playing with the gorilla, he hadn't really had experience watching kids or anything before, or he was always, like, hanging around and, like, seeing stuff I was doing, and he was really nice, so I was always talking to him, and he was, like, always like, yeah, I'm kind of scared of kids, but that's cool, you're doing it. And I really liked him. Like, he was very honest, you know, about, he's like, I really like dogs, I'm really good with dogs, but not kids. And then so that guy who was speaking, he was hosted at that boy's house. So then the boy came up to me, and he said, how about if I watch the kid in the kid's corner so he can go speak? Would that be okay? And I was like, well, that'd be great. Because, I mean, you know, I wasn't trying to be mean, but I was trying to set up the space. I couldn't watch the kid. So that was, like, that was my favorite story of the whole time, because unexpectedly, a speaker dad got to have childcare. Unexpectedly, a kid got to have a good time. And unexpectedly, like, a child-free person who had never really thought about these issues kind of just got pulled into the whole thing. And that's my favorite parts of that room was like that, you know, like, we had different things going on. There was I had scheduled events, and one class was taught by an eight-year-old who was, like, a radical unschooler. She was doing a button-making class, and she really didn't want to teach it to the kids. She was just like, I hope, like, cause, you know, when you're eight, you're kind of like, well, I'm really cool, I'm not going to teach stuff to babies. And so, like, a lot of adults did come in. They made really awesome buttons, and just that kind of thing, like, just having, you know, that was my favorite experiences of the Kids Corner, and I have a lot more to learn about it. And as much as I've been trying to teach people my issues, as much as I've been learning, because I think I've been very patient with talking to people, because number one, my child's grown, because two, I keep realizing how much I don't understand, like how much I don't know. Like, when I was in Montreal, I don't know how to speak French. Like, there can be stuff that's really basic to your experiences that you're like, well, of course, that person should do this with a kid. If they don't do that, they're really stupid, because why didn't they do that? You know, or something in your head, like when you're used to something. But if you come into something where it's new to you, it's kind of like me around French-speaking people. Like, I just didn't realize some of the needs, like, for the interpreter. Like, everybody asked, they said, you know, do you need this interpreter to interpret the workshop? And they were like, no. But there was actually like three French-speaking mothers in our workshop that really actually didn't understand it at all. And I didn't know what that felt like until I went to the next workshop that was done in French. And they had an English interpreter. And we were in the corner like listening to them. And then I was like, the shoe's on the other foot. So I started to like totally learn. Like every time in all my activisms, I started to learn all the things, like how I could be oppressing other people or how I'm not including other people. And like, and we've changed the workshop to say parents instead of mothers, because I'm a single mother, so, and I think it's a real big feminist issue. I'm really keyed into, like, women and children's rights. But as we've gone along, there's been, like, a lot of rad dads who are like, hey, like, I'm feeling really left out of this talk, you know? Like, that it's still, like, can't you say parents, like, who's ever involved in doing this? You know, like, it's kind of like, there's a way of the future that we're aiming for that's better, and I definitely felt there was, like, a voices of, like, a lot about that, the feeling left out, so I changed it to parents. And then the third thing is, like, I never ever thought about, like, for my kids' corner, like, what I should do for special needs kids. Like, I just didn't think about it. And then one day I read something that Jen had written, and she was talking about, like, childcare where the people never thought about it. And then I think she emailed them, and they said, oh, we're just not set up for that. And then I was like, I don't know. I think when you're left out in some way, and then you start opening your eyes to how other people are left out, like, you're not the only, you know. So I'm trying to, we're trying to expand this. So I'm really excited, like, that Jen's speaking today, because to educate us more about how to support special needs kids, because I need to learn that. So she's our next speaker.
Hi, I'm Jen. I hope I don't get so bossy as I do. But, so I have a 9-year-old, almost 9-year-old with autism, and I have a 19-month-old who's typically developing. So I've had very different experiences parenting and in the community as a parent. And just to kind of speak about the whole, also the other part of the equation, the dad part, my partner is the primary caregiver for the child, which is a whole other workshop, but, you know, I do know that he feels a lot of lack of support as well. So I found this definition of what special needs is, because it's kind of all over the map. So what I got from about.com is special needs is an umbrella underneath which a staggering array of diagnoses can be wedged. Children with special needs may have mild learning disabilities or profound mental retardation, food allergies or terminal illnesses, developmental delays that catch up quickly or remain entrenched, occasional panic attacks, or serious psychiatric problems. And I think that's pretty good because it shows what a wide range of needs there are. And I have to admit that I really hate the term special needs, but I haven't come up with anything better, so I'm just going to use that.
Exceptionalities?
We'll get there. So, first, I was curious how many of you have experience with special needs kids. Okay. I'm a little surprised by that. I think that's great. We did this in Providence, in like half the room, I don't know, 20 or 30 people. Mm-hmm. So, then some of this might be random, but statistically, they say that about 17% of kids in America have some sort of disability, but, you know, that's the CDC, and God knows where they get their information, and I'm sure it's totally underreported. But, you know, that's a lot of people in this country, even if that is underreported. And, you know, you've heard from Vicki and Chana about parenting in the anarchist community, and it's not like my oppression is worse than your oppression, but I just want to acknowledge that while parenting is always really difficult, when you have an extra set of challenges on top of just having a child in a community, it can be exhausting. And everything that seems simple becomes not simple. So we, and, you know, speaking for other parents, especially kids that I know, we're always in this position where we have to constantly advocate for our children and make sure that they get appropriate care instead of just, you know, one-size-fits-all care. And an example that happened to me this week is that my son goes to a school that's just for kids with autism in Queens, and they called me at work to say that he had tripped over a chair and fallen flat on his face, bleeding from the mouth and laying deep in the mouth. So I immediately called our special needs dentist, who's holistic, which is great, but it took me 2 years to find somebody that was holistic and special needs, so his teeth were, like, rotting out of his head. So I get him there, and we're seeing, we literally have to, like, sit on top of him to get him even to be seen, which is traumatic for him, traumatic for me. And then they say, well, he needs X, Y, and Z, but we can't do that here because we don't have enough staff. So we're going to send you to the hospital in Long Island that has a pediatric dental clinic. Except that dental clinic is closed, so what you really need to do is go to the emergency room. So I'm taking, and, you know, I didn't really describe him, but my son Luke is really hyperactive. He's nonverbal. He requires, like, constant one-on-one care when we're not at home. So getting this kid who's been through this totally, like, traumatic accident where, you know, he's upset, and then bringing him to the emergency room, which is crowded and noisy and fluorescent lighting and all that. And he was actually really fantastic, but this thing that should have taken like an hour and a half took over 5 hours to get done. So, you know, whereas if it had been so long, she might have just gone to the dentist, got seen, and gotten out. But with us going through this whole ordeal, and it turned out he didn't need anything anyway. So that's kind of what, you know, my life is. And someone once called Luke my blessing and my burden, and I think that's a really fantastic way of describing it. So as an anarchist, or someone who identifies as anti-authoritarian, I have to rely on a lot of mainstream society services just to make sure that we get through all these day-to-day issues. And there's, you know, tons of waiting lists for everything. There's red tape. And it's disempowering, especially when you don't want to be involved in the system. And I'm actually really lucky, and I recognize that I have a lot of privilege because of, you know, having a middle-class background, being white, being college-educated, being able to talk to these people to get services that we need. And there are a lot of people who don't have that. And, you know, I wish there was a way that I could go around and help them advocate, but that's why I want to see more people in the community get involved. So I've also got a lot of community support in New York, and I think that that's fantastic, but I think once I leave this small community, I'm basically screwed. Like, trying to go outside of the city where people don't know me, and trying to go even to conferences and arrange childcare so I can go and do things, it's really, really difficult. And so there's this woman that I would be emailing with who lives in England, and apparently this isn't, you know, just a United States problem. And I'm paraphrasing her, but she was saying how our families would have completely inadequate support in a post-governmental world, and it keeps her up at night. And I totally agree with that. It seems like within radical communities, the only attention paid to disability rights is really from people who are somewhat differently abled but able to advocate for themselves, and it's about adults, not children. And, you know, again, most of us who have these kids have to rely on this government that we resent to give us access to these really outstandingly expensive services and therapies. I think my son's school alone probably costs, you know, upwards of $30,000 a year. And I can't homeschool. It would just be, like, banging. I'd want to bang my head against the wall with him if we did that all day. I stayed home with him for 3 years, and I know that for me to be his parent, that is not the best route to take. And he also learns in a very specific way that I don't enjoy doing. But that's what he needs. So I've learned to adjust my expectations to put my politics aside in some situations and, you know, just get him what's best for him. But this also means that I'm under constant scrutiny because I have, you know, mandated reporters at the school. I have a social worker who gets us through this maze of services. They also have to do monthly home visits. And I, at one point, I was a single parent with him for a few years. I didn't have enough money to rent a space in New York. I was living with family, then I was subletting from somebody, but the situation was just, it got to the point where I really needed something else, and I put myself on a waiting list for a squat. And then I realized, what the hell am I doing? Because if I have a home visit at the squat, like, my kid's gone. You know, no matter how wonderful that community is or how great my personal space is, like, they see that, forget it. It's all over. So that is not an option. And so, you know, there is stuff that exists that's outside the mainstream, but again, it's like about money. And for alternative treatments, insurance isn't taking, the practitioners don't take insurance, they don't take Medicaid, they charge you like $300 for a half an hour visit. And it's really for really wealthy people to be able to take advantage. I don't know if you ever heard of this place called McCarthy School, it's in Manhattan. It's like $85,000 a year to send your kid there. I mean, who the hell has that kind of money? And so, with this very sick class of kids with special needs, or in that case, in autism, are getting, like, the best services, while the rest of us are kind of, like, down here just trying to get what we need. So, this is very broad, and these are a lot of things that actually can't be dealt with necessarily by my community, but just, you know, to give you an idea. But there are some very concrete things that people can do in community. So, my husband was reading my notes, and he said, okay, but you're not telling people why they need to support special needs kids in the community. And, I mean, I think that's kind of a no-brainer, but if you're talking about sustainable communities, it has to be inclusive, and that means everybody. Not just, you know, the parents, not just the grown-ups, not just the kids, but the kids who have extra needs. And I have seen really good progress in the last 5 years that I've been back in New York City towards including kids. You know, there are childcare collectives, there's childcare offered here. Those are great steps, but for me, it's still not enough. And for the people I know, you know, in Europe, ones that are spread out across the country, we're all having the same battle. So these were just some specific ideas, and I actually started putting together a list that my printer died, and I didn't get a chance to go somewhere else to print it. So if anybody wants it, I can give you my email later on. But so one would be to try to make events accessible and inclusive. And if an event is going to be inappropriate for a kid with special needs, try to have appropriate childcare offered so that families feel welcome and can participate. But also be honest about it. You know, if you really can't do it, then get back to people. I've had so many situations where I just don't get an email back, you know. And that doesn't make me feel particularly welcome. I'd rather people were honest and say, actually, we can't accommodate you. I'm sorry. But maybe tell us ways that we can make it better. See what the needs are of people around you beyond at events or at meetings if you know people that have special needs kids. Find out what you can do to help them. Lizanne, who Vicki mentioned, is taking my son for 2 hours today so I can go run around the book fair and just enjoy it. You know, that was unsolicited, that's great. Somebody might need a couple hours to do laundry or just, like, have a break from their childhood and completely lose some shit with them. That happens a lot. Or they might need help running errands, so you can pick something up for them. Or maybe they need someone to advocate at their child's annual educational meeting, and you can go do that just to sit there and be a witness. Something that I hadn't thought about before that came up with last night was that you really, and I think you mentioned calling people on your crap earlier about their language, but you know, call people on it when they use words. Because it's so common for us to say retarded, you know, when we're talking about something that we don't think works well. Or I, you know, I use spaz, and I have a friend with a kid with CP. If I use that in front of her, she'd probably want to smack me. So this is, you know, just part of our everyday language, but we really need to start thinking about it. So we do that when it comes to sexism and racism, but, you know, we don't do it here. If you have kids or spend a lot of time with kids, try to explain to them about difference in disability. I know going back to Sulam, she's grown up with Luke, but she still has questions about him, even having known him for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And be honest about it. You know, it's better to sit down and explain what's going on than to have a child be afraid. We went to a doctor's appointment a few weeks ago, and Luke walked up to this kid, and he just, like, ran away and started talking to his mom about him. And I was like, okay, you know, the mom can ask me what's going on. I can explain it instead of seeing kids, like, bolt from my child because he's jumping up and down and doing that. And it's hurtful when that happens. And also, be respectful of the fact that most of us who have the special needs kids have to work within the system for a variety of reasons. Seems like even within the radical parenting community, there's a lot of finger pointing, like, you should be radically unschooling, and you should do this and that and that. And for me and for my friends that I've discussed with, it's just not possible for us to do it. So, and also recognize that the system really sucks for us as well, and that we face judgments from people within the system constantly. Yeah. When I had pink hair and I went to doctor's appointments, they just looked at me and, like, acted like, you know, I had no idea what they were talking about. And I read constantly, and I've educated myself so much to be able to advocate well. So, you know, I can come back and say this and that, but that immediate judgment is there just based on the way I look. So, that's pretty much all I wanted to contribute.
That was great.
Yes. Should we, what are the additions to childcare that we take responsibility for?
Well, first of all, since is do you mind if since there are so many different kinds of special needs, and this is the thing I was working on that I wish I had brought with me. Some kids might need very little. Some kids might have sensory issues where there's too much noise and too much light and they freak out. With Luke, I know if I brought him here today to the toddler, like, it's on a balcony. There's no way to close off the sides, so he could just run out and, you know, be on the street before someone got him. You really need to ask parents what they need and see, do they need a one-to-one person? Can it be a group sitting? Are there allergies that the kid has that you really need to be aware about? And that's true of all kids. But some kids, and again, you know, this is my experience with this one child, but Luke doesn't know what he's allergic to, so he might try to grab something, whereas another kid who has a peanut allergy might be able to verbalize that and say, like, oh, I can't have that. You know, my kid will just grab it and then, like, have an allergic reaction for the next few days. I'd love to say that list. It's just off the top of my head. Listen to what parents have to say and take really good notes and see if you can meet their needs. And also, like, getting up. There's an elevator, but, you know, I have a friend whose kid, I mentioned, has CP, and he has a walker who's in a wheelchair. It would be really difficult for him to get onto a place that has stairs. So stuff like that. And I think this goes for all child care. Have it close by to where an event is happening. And I remember, was it last? Not last year, the year before at NCOR, they had child care in a whole separate building than where the event was. And I was like, this is just not an option for me. I need to be close by if something happens. So I didn't even pursue that.
Well, one thing I was also going to jump in, and maybe this is stepping on your toes a little bit, but when you first came in this morning, you were and Luke was jumping up and down and running around the book fair, you said, like, you got, like, a dozen dirty looks, and, like, I guess Luke tried to, like, touch somebody's cake and the man gave you shit about it, and it's sort of like, you know, like, that doesn't make, like, for all parents, that doesn't make us feel welcome, and I think it might make you feel like even more unwelcome to be like, wow, you know, I come in, my kid is being himself, and immediately people are like looking at me funny, looking at me dirty, you know.
Yeah, and there's streaks earlier that was fine.
But, you know, like, maybe, like, it would be helpful to, like, have people be like, hey, you know, it's okay that he does this, or be like, why are you giving that woman a dirty look, you know, stop. You know, like, to feel like we have allies in this community and not be like, I can't bring my kid here, you know, because he's disturbing other people and other people are giving me grief about it.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to me with my 19-month-old. Like, he's all about being adorable and, you know, sucking people in with his charm. And when it's like, I was saying I have, like, dual parents that, you know, I have, like, my feet in two different worlds with this. Because when I go out with him and just him, like, everybody in the world will stop and tell me how adorable my child is, and he just sucks it up. You know? But it's a totally different experience when I'm with Luke, and people are like, what the hell is he doing here? You know, can't you keep that kid quiet? Since that was my only experience for a long time, that was just the way I thought people were.
You get judged a lot as a parent. Like, if your kid is acting charming or whatever, or cute, you know, people can like it. But if your child's, like, crying or doing something that somebody doesn't want it to do, like, people can think you're the worst parent or the greatest parent. They don't allow for, like, everybody has good and bad days. You know, cause I remember when I was, like, more, had a younger child, I was always like, you're the coolest parent. Or, like, I don't know about her, you know, and, yeah, like, that happens a lot. Or people kind of come about even, like, maybe something little a kid's doing that you don't want them to do, and you could just tell them. I guess you have to get used to dealing with kids, but you could just say, could you please not do this? Like, here, you could play with that. Or, you know, just talk to them. But that barely ever happens. Like, you just look at the parent, and they get really nervous, and they go, oh, God, I hate mom. I hate that kid. I hate that parent. Why doesn't the parent do something? You know? And I think, like, communication is really important. Like, almost all radical parents that I talked to were not good allies to other parents before they became a parent. Like, for some reason in our culture, we're really, like, we don't have a lot of experience with this.
I think, I'm glad you brought up judgment. I think parents get such judgment in every, and especially mothers, get such judgment in every pocket of our world, and parenting for some reason becomes a open ground for anybody to tell you how you should be parenting. And I find that as much, if not more, in the radical community than I do in the mainstream community. And I, you know, from things, I just feel like that's something that really needs to be discussed, because we're not doing everything that maybe the perfect anarchist parent would do. You know, I have friends that the fact that she has a plastic thing in her mouth right now would, like, you know, really upset them. A pacifier isn't going to help her, you know, I have a good friend who has a 5-month-old, I have a 5-week-old, and she's having a terrible time with her milk supply. And she feels so guilty and so pressured about nursing that it's making it harder. And I just think that, I think it's very easy, especially if we don't have children, to judge. And I think people who do have children are still judging. We judge the parenting. We judge whether your child is watching TV, whether they're eating meat or dairy, or whether they're sucking on a pacifier, or whether they're co-sleeping or not. We get this all the time. And I think it's something to be aware of.
Yeah. And that we're all different, and to be tolerant to each other for, like, the greater aim of things that we do believe in. You know, we're not going to agree on everything as a group.
And then to respond, wanting to amass movement, we're having to communicate these ideas to people that maybe aren't necessarily versed at home in exact language about politics, and being able to hear that, and everybody makes it.
Yeah.
It's probably like everything we think we turned off when we don't have more animals.
Yeah, and then we just become like Christians or something.
But it becomes easier to drop out of the community than to say, look, I still want to be a part of this, and my child will pass by. Deal with it. it's hard.
There's so much potential. I feel like there's so much, I even bothered once to talk to anarchists, I just think there's so much potential. Like, despite all bad things, you know, like, or even in young people, young punks, even a lot of people that wouldn't even think about having kids, like, they can be the best allies in the world. You know, like, all the good times in me and Clover's life, like, she was the only kid. She was the token kid. But, like, there was this whole group, like, playing with her. And, like, people who don't have kids have much more energy. And, we would go out and just, or even my friend Justin, I remember once when we moved to Minneapolis, Clover was kind of in a difficult, bratty, that's a mean thing to say, but she was in a difficult age. And we're going to ride in this truck for, like, 48 hours in the cab of, like, the three of us. And I was like, Justin, I was like, you know what we're getting in? Can you handle us? And, like, we were going to go in a restaurant, and I was like, she can be really bad. Like, I can't say these words, but just, I know other people had issues. Like, she's always, like, touching things and talking to people. And he was just like, China, all my friends are so embarrassing. Like, all my friends are, like, so bad. There's no way your kid could ever embarrass me. I'm like, that's what I love about the punk community. Like, I love, like, being in that and not having, like, I could never, back when I was a young parent, I just couldn't fit into mainstream society. I could not. That was not a choice. You know what I mean? I think, like, some of that even, like, crusty punk stuff can be really great for parents, really great, it really works for toddlers. As they get older, then the kids kind of outgrow that stage. Like, crusty punk is a good toddler. But there's just so much potential within our community, and there's just a small time frame that we are actually independent people, but we're not a child, or we're not an old person, or we're not needing help. I mean, we are pretty codependent on each other, but there's a small period of time where we can think that we're very independent and we don't need anybody else.
Or we're not responsible for anybody else.
We're not
else.
Responsible, we've talked a lot today. I'm sorry. Because usually we, like, in the other workshops, we did a lot of discussion, too, and I'm not quite sure what the discussion quest, if there's, maybe just turn it over to you guys if you have questions, or, like, last time we discussed, like, concrete ways we could support women and children, and then we made this list, but I didn't want to ask the same question just because I'm definitely interested in what are you guys' communities. I talked to two people when we started this up, and one person going to be a dad, or you are a dad, or were you?
That co-parenting.
Yeah. And you were saying, and you were telling me about how you've had this like community where these have been issues like for a long time. And so I kind of think it's interesting, like, what are all of you's communities, and what's, let me just help me out. I'm gonna pass this around. And I got, well, we have these really great things. That from the two workshops before. This is from Providence. These are free for anybody who wants one today. And this in here, Jen wrote something about how to support special needs kids. So it's really cool. And then this one is the first one, the Boston one we did.
The Boston one?
And it's really, I mean, I just think they're really great. And Vicki and I are going to edit a Radical Parent Allies handbook, so we're taking in information if you have stories to share of, like, your community and how you've supported parents and kids. We're trying to gather that information. Plus, Vicki's done the Anarchist Mother Survey, so we're all about, like, getting back.
Sharing information.
Sharing information. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create something. I also have little coloring books. Anybody knows kids that would like a little coloring book?
I think one thing that works in our community, and actually our communities, I guess we're kind of all growing up at different paces and having more children, but one thing that works, a lot of us live in the same building, and just being able to, like, watch each other's kids for 15 minutes, or to have our kids play in the hallway together while we're doing something has been, it's just, most people don't get that anymore, and it's been really wonderful to have. And she will go to anyone, you know, she knows she's got a good 30 people in her life that she can, that can take care of her.
That's really cool. Where do you live?
We're in Hartford, Connecticut.
Yeah, I knew it's going to be New York. What'd you say?
Why is that?
It's mostly expense.
Yeah.
In the community that I've spent most of my time in Gainesville, Florida, there's lots of kids, and these issues for the last, I'd say, 9 years have been really huge, and stuff that, as an activist, I never thought about until it was demanded that we start addressing these issues as activists, as community spaces, and conferences, and protests, and having kid-friendly spaces. And for many years we did there was a non-parent co-op that was all run by non-parents, and it was really held accountable by the parents. And so meetings were done between both parents and non-parents, and it worked wonderfully. It wasn't the most sustainable, but it served the needs at that time for the parents that did have younger kids. And a new thing that started up with it, when there's a new parent, very new, like within right after a child was born, for the first 2 weeks, there's a list that goes around, and everybody signs up to do meals for morning and evening, and it's designed, which feels really important to me, that who cooks the meals just drops it off and doesn't stay around. It's supposed to be just a real supportive thing. Here is food, mouth up, we're off. And I think that's a real great, concrete way to support new parents and to really start to set the stage for a supportive community and what it means and create dialogue around that.
Yeah, and what goes around comes around. Because, like, those kids are going to grow up and they're going to bring you some food one day when you, like, break your foot, you know?
Yeah,
it's totally going
to
come back.
When I moved up to New York, I had friends that had a kid. I called and ordered food for them to go, to just be delivered to their house and dropped off, like, from a sushi place. So it was like, now I'm about to have a kid, and I could only hope that that happens to me here. So I'm in New York now.
What's nice to say also, I think, what you're describing is ideal, and in New York, we're all spread out in mostly four boroughs. I think everyone really likes that island. But it's really difficult to have, like, a small locally based kind of community, so we define community a lot more broadly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know in my neighborhood, I have yet to meet, like, an anti-authoritarian parent, and I'm having a very difficult time in Queens finding that kind of community, so I always wind up going somewhere else to do it, so.
Was there a name of the group that was, like, parents and non-parents? Was there a name to their group, or was just...
No. But it evolved into, from the temple, to evolve into a preschool that is still really challenging with the community, and I think that's, as kids get older, finding alternatives to schooling, to me, feels a real priority.
That's another issue, though, that comes up, how our kids are getting educated, whether you're homeschooling or not. Like, I'm glad you said, I would jump out a window. So, you know, it's not going to happen. And whether you unschool or whether, you know, Waldorf, it's definitely something in our community that we've had to really say, okay, every single family is doing something a little different. That's our discussion with so much judgment and real arguments.
One thing in my experience was we had a space that was just a big open room, and someone built a room on the side of it. They were living there with their child, but they made it easier to their child so that you could know their child. There wasn't like you go stay in the kid's space.
Yeah.
You bump into the child, you kind of like, you know, I don't know you, I kind of know your mom. Mm-hmm. You knew them, so you were out and about across the box to the things that you know, my age was for your child. You can come up to them and be like, hey, talk to the child and engage the child without scaring them because the parent already taken an issue to involve with, you know, with this person as an individual, which made it easier.
Amy Hamilton was supposed to be here to talk about Brooklyn Preschool, and she got very sick last night and barking on her. So she's not here, obviously. And I have her email address if anyone wants to talk to her about Brooklyn Preschool, but they also have a website, and it's pretty self-explanatory for anybody who's interested in that. It's in Turk Slope, and it's moving next year somewhere else in Turk Slope. But I think it's brooklynpreschool.org.
Where was that story taking place out of the space of the open room? Where was that at, your story?
It was in South Carolina.
Okay.
Was that the only Karen in the sort of like anarchist activist community, or was it?
I would say so.
Okay.
The one that I dealt with
okay.
Every day, but since it was a public space and all other parents came in there.
Ah, okay.
They lived there, so you were always there.
Uh-huh.
And what was the name of the town?
Columbia. I can give you a
That'd be cool. So I'm totally always on to like information gathering. Like I just take notes from the meeting of what people say because it might be, you know, it might be interesting. I never know what's gonna like come together. Later on I'll think about something that somebody said and I'm like, wait, where did they remember? Who are they? Or, where's your community again?
We're in Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay. Hartford, Connecticut. Is anybody from New York? Oh, you're here.
Hartford.
Yeah. What's your community like in New York here?
In the city or Vermont?
Yeah, like just like where you live or what you consider
or like
your community.
What?
Definitely in my new community, parents all are also like about it. And we're the only campus. So it's actually been good to share. I mean, we definitely have like tried out ways of just generally helping out our community. And I think it tends to take a more things like, you know, our neighbors have children that are in the great school.
Do you watch any kids? Do you watch any of your friends' kids? Or
Vermont,
understand like how kids' oppression correlates to their own oppression. Quandary, because I do consider myself an anarchist as an anarchist parent, and how do you do that, you know? Okay, I respect my child as her own individual person since day one, that, like, it's not my job to mold her, like, you know, she's going to blossom into what she's going to do, and I will respect her choices, and I treat her in an equal manner, you know, but at the same time, I'm also her mother, I have responsibility. You know, if she walks into the street, I have to, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, you know, like... Exactly, but also, exactly. It's exactly, it's that kind of, like, helping, like, you help a person to grow their own independence, you know, but you, it's in that role, and, like, you know, part of me, in my mind, you know, I always thought that once you're 13 years old, you know, you're going to be really healthy, and then my daughter was 13. And I saw still how much a little kid she was, and it's really frightening because you know all the dangers that you went into and what you can get into. And so it's like, it's this balance because in some ways, you know, you learn to let go and let them get hurt and they learn their own lessons. And then in other ways, it's more like your instincts where you're just like, I really think she's going to get hurt and I got to say something here. And sometimes it was to the point of just being vocal about it. I would be like, I think your girlfriend's really verbally abusive. And then she'd be like, you're full of shit, Mom. And I'm like, okay, but I just want you to know, I think your girlfriend's really verbally abusive. So I think, like, a really good dialogue, like, you know, just to communicate. I think...
I suppose the worst thing to talk about is your parents' shared experiences. Like, when I was
You know what? Not in our workshops so much, I don't think. Or if they were there, it didn't necessarily come up. Like, I know there's, like, a lot of queer parents in Baltimore. I feel like there's a lot of... I feel, like, familiar with the voices and writing of queer parents, but not so much of our workshops showed up. In Baltimore, I felt like I was debating a little bit with this, like, transgender person about who was very anti-kid. You know, like, I've more, like... Sometimes we talk about, like, people that are, like, they're not going to have kids and... They don't like kids in that sense, but I don't know.
Actually, I've been working on a book called Homesick Friends of Mine, who are lesbian couples and children and stepchildren of each other. They don't really do as much after sex. They have four kids, they don't really get up to it, but you know, they've got a whole other set of challenges.
Especially in this community, at least the index is very focused on, like, you know, are you out, you know, on the barricades, are you out, you know, in the sound town? There's also, I mean, just generally, I remember that everyone was in the city, so, you know, it's, I think that's again, you would have more people in, like, every, like, it's not everyone's reality to be, you know, certain track.
I know that, like my friend Ariel Gore, who's, like, the editor with Obama, like, she's having another baby, and she's definitely in a very serious relationship with another woman. Yeah. It's like her and her girlfriend is so great, and, like, so they're going to be raising a baby together. So, I mean, it's just, I've never, I guess it hasn't, there's not things that struck out, there's not things that particularly Like, I know in the early, I don't know, I didn't inarticulate. But, there's definitely, I think things have progressed a lot, in my lifetime of what I've seen, like, growing up. Like, my daughter in high school was the vice president of the Gay and Straight Alliance, and, like, when I was young, there would be no, like, yeah, I'm going to high school and I'm the vice president of the Gay and Straight Alliance, like, right on, you know what I mean? It wouldn't be, like, I mean, it was, like, if anything, she had some pressure one year that she felt like it was really cool to be a radical lesbian and that bisexual is not cool, so she felt, like, a little pressure, like, to run, like, not cool to be bisexual, but she never really felt, like, pressure of, like, you should be heterosexual. Like, I just think there's definitely, like, different, like, all the things that are progressing from when I was young, like, it's, like, radical parents and gay and straight rights and, like, all these different things are really, like, coming along.
Are other people drifting in for the next workshop? Because I realize also we're not keeping track of time whatsoever. Like, I'm not sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm. If anybody, this is 1 second of self-promotion. Mm-hmm. If anybody's in New York or has an idea of where to put up a flyer, like, I'm coming back to town next,
Friday.
then I'm going on book tour with Ariel. So she wrote a new book. I got my first book coming out. And these are, like, 2 flyers. Anybody is, I don't know, a New York person?
I didn't hear.
I was just looking if anybody's in New York for if they want a flyer because I'm having a reading next week. And Ariel was like, "You promote our reading when you're there."
Yeah.
So this is like me promoting.
Which also a book on 16 years of subculture parenting. So it's not just sort of like, "Oh, look, I have a book and it's about chairs," you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been going to
chairs
for
chairs.
17 years. And the book,
you still won't let me pick you up,
that,
will you?
So
you absolutely will not.
I think it's in the future generation for subculture parents, kids, friends, and others.
It's great.
And you can check out our table because we're tabling. So we're like,
oh, yeah, we're by the food.
So
we're by the food, so if you want to stop by and, like, say hi and talk. Yeah. Anybody else have any things that, like, we didn't touch on, or maybe we could touch on more, since, as Jen pointed out, the next presenters are not here yet, unless you were our next presenter. Oh, no, you're the dad.
I'm going to say something, or a thought of mine that's been really helpful for me is around language.
Hello.
And how language can really contribute to a lot of conflict, especially mm-hmm. working with kids. I've worked with a lot of at-risk youth. Mm-hmm. For in a very intentional, as a counselor, as a peacekeeper, moderator mm-hmm. at a camp, and the camp was devoted to nonviolent communication and to using different styles of educating as opposed to disciplining. So, to me, I feel like a really big piece that I have learned in working with kids is how I speak to kids. And how I treat, and the words I use, and the language of blame, the language of judgment, and diagnosis, and stuff like that, that can really create or influence different belief systems that kids can develop. So,
yeah.
I know I can't dive into that, it's a huge topic, but just put that piece in, how I communicate feels really important. But in my friends, in my activist groups, and with kids.
Yeah, definitely. And giving language to each other, I mean, we have tools. Like some of that's, like, I guess, psychology and language and stuff, but, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, you guys were really great. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you.